Welcome, acolytes of the Yellow King, to another episode of the Bitter End Podcast with me, Tom Denny.
May he reign in hell for all eternity. And me, High Priest Todd Jordan.
Good to have you here, High Priest. Well, we're back. Season 8, Episode 4. We're watching Home Alone 4, continuing our deep dive into the McAllister / Hell saga of the Yellow King.
Now, yes, listeners, you did hear him right. It is the continuation of the McAllister saga, because we've just watched the trailer, and fucking McAllisters are back.
There's a lot in this 30-second trailer for a home DVD release of Home Alone 4. Also called Home Alone 4, was it called like...
Taking Back the House.
Taking Back the House.
Because, yes, it seems that this time the McAllister clan have been locked out of their house or something. The baddies have taken it over and they are the ones trying to break in.
Or they're in like this high-tech house with like a super advanced security system. It seems like the massive wealth that the McAllisters have established has just quadrupled and they're absolutely minted. Now, there's some very important things. We've got Kevin is back, not played by Mac and Cheese Culkin.
No way. Some little twerp, a lot younger.
He's de-aged. So how this is going to fit in with the lore?
Well, maybe this is another prequel or yeah.
But another thing that we've got in here is we've got the return of Marv, one half of the Wet Bandits, played by French Stewart of Third Rock from the Sun fame, the guy who played Harry.
I love French Stewart.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how it's going to work out with him playing Marv.
He's not the obvious choice to replace Joe Pesci. Like, could you imagine Goodfellas, but just with French Stewart instead of little Joey Fisher?
He's replacing Daniel Stern.
Oh, I thought he was...
No, he's wearing Joe Pesci's hat.
Right, that's what threw me off.
But he's meant to be... He's Marv. He's meant to be...
Oh.
Yeah, Daniel Stern. Which is just so... Why not just have him be a different bad guy?
Yeah, well, why not just have it be a different family?
I'm interested in where Harry is. Like, where's little Joey Fish's gone?
Did they get divorced, those two?
Yeah. Why has he gone solo? I'm looking forward to finding out some of that. There's a very short trailer, but...
30 seconds!
Yeah.
30 seconds! It's over in a flash! We've already talked for longer than the trailer lasted.
I know. But so many questions there. What... Why is a big question. Why any of this? Why?
And I am looking forward to finding out, Tom. And thank you for joining us on this journey, as you are about to find out, right as we do.
Yeah, so we'll go and dip our head in the bucket that is Home Alone 4 shortly. But first, it's another round of the IMDb guessing game.
Mate.
My boy Todd Jordan here, he's going to have to guess what this film has been rated by the good users of IMDb. So,
also, I want to know what it's been rated by the bad users too.
Oh yeah, the line is so blurred, isn't it, with IMDb users?
They know who they are.
You know who you are. You've all got blood on your hands. So, Home Alone 4 came out in 2002.
Shut the front door.
I know. And as we also mentioned in the last episode, this was meant to be, like, had this been successful upon its release and got good numbers, this would have been the pilot to a Home Alone TV series. We can only imagine what a Home Alone TV series would have been like. I imagine it would have been a bit like Lost and would have really delved into the Yellow King saga, with this whole thing of, like, Kevin is just stuck in this house for all eternity. Marv and Harry are just trying to break into the house for all eternity. And when will it end and where are they? But we can only dream about that. You just have to give me your score based on that 30-second trailer that we just watched.
What score did Part 3 get again?
Right, so Part 3 from 97 got a 4.3. So that we've gone down. We've got from a 7.5 with the first one, 6.6 with the second, then a 4.3 with
4.1.
Mate, I like your moxie and I like your enthusiasm. It's a 2.5.
Oh, no! You didn't!
That's a bad one, isn't it?
That's a bit of a baddie.
That is a rotter.
Oh, mate, it's been a while since we went lower than 3.
Yeah, I know, right?
Been a while since we went lower than 4.
Yeah, fuck, I can't even think what... This is like... what, Howling territory?
Yeah.
This is lower rated than Universal Soldier 2 and 3.
Oh, mate, I'm really excited. Let's go pick that bone clean.
Holy shit, you guys. It's a Christmas miracle.
The movie is under 90 minutes long.
Hallelujah.
Mwah, 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 mwah. You can watch it twice in 3 hours if you want, but don't.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say once is too much. Because this film is a stinker.
Oh, Tom, you are right.
Yes.
You're definitely right, and it definitely is. But I had a great time.
I'm glad you had a good time. I mean, this film throws up some serious fucking shit with the lore of the Home Alone universe.
Yeah, it does. And it took me a while to understand what was going on. But luckily, don't you worry, I know exactly what was going on. It's just really weird. It's very, very unsettling. There's a news story that's been going around quite a bit online at the moment, as at time of record, which is December 2017, which is to do with the way that algorithms are automatically generating videos for children on YouTube for kids to watch, and how when it's not actually created by a human but by an algorithm, the results are quite strange and sometimes a bit like unsettling. And it's not necessarily being made maliciously, but there's just these things where it goes, okay, well, we know that kids like these characters and these colors and this song, so we'll just randomly mash them together, and it creates this sort of eerie, hypnotic, uncanny valley thing. And that is exactly what's going on with this film.
Yeah, I mean, it feels very like there's very little human touch to this film. It feels somewhat rushed, shall we say?
The very first note I have is, whoa, the quality has nosedived.
Fuck me. Yeah, you can tell that this is a made-for-TV movie, because it just opens, it just says on the screen, Home Alone 4. There's no, like, the other films kind of like, you know, black screen, some snow falling, we fade in on the title. There's a little bit more finesse, there's a little bit of easing you in as an audience. On this, it just goes, Home Alone 4, starring French Stewart and everyone else in alphabetical order.
It would be like if you walked into a restaurant, right, sat down and said, hey, can I have some spaghetti, please? And they went, all right, then, here you go, plump, and then it just immediately, without a plate or cutlery, just plopped a load of spaghetti in your lap.
Yeah, and then
you asked for that, didn't you?
Yeah, and you look at it and you kind of go, I mean, you can visibly see the diminished quality of the spaghetti compared to the last spaghetti that you just had.
But you have to eat it because you asked for it.
Yeah, you did ask for it, yeah. And so you can't really complain about anything's like just the hot mess of editing that this film is, because the editing in this is pretty gruesome. Just there's so many budget, like, cannot believe that somebody did it, like, wipes, like, transitions.
Oh, yeah, like, these, like, zigzag wipes.
Yeah, like a spiral kind of clock hand kind of wipe. And then, like, just bits of editing where they just kind of, like, really tread on people's lines at points.
Yes.
Where they just, like, get just cut off. Like, there's a bit where, so this film is about Kevin McAllister.
Yeah.
It's not played by McKinney Culkin, but we've got a new version of Kevin McAllister, and he does the kid does the classic Kevin McAllister slap on the cheeks. Ah, they just like fade that out and just get on with some other shit. And you go like, no, that's like a Home Alone money shot. Like, that's like one of the things.
Yeah,
right?
They just fade the bro down.
It's like, fuck this. Like, because I don't know if anyone who was making this film had actually really knew what Home Alone, I hadn't seen any of the other Home Alone films, so they're probably like, we've been told that this needs to be in the film. I really don't see the relevance of it. Fade that out. Because there's some other things that are in stark contrast to other Home Alone films, but we'll get to that very, very soon.
You know what's really weird about the quality?
Mm.
It's directed by a dude called Rod Daniel. Do you know who Rod Daniel is?
Who is he?
Well, he made only one particularly significant movie, but it's quite well liked. He made Teen Wolf.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But that must have been made, what, in like the 80s, right?
I think, yeah, it's very early 80s.
I think maybe he's... Do you feel like he's like frightened to come into the light of like the early 2000s when this was made? And he's like, no. I'm working with 1980s money and 1980s tech, which explains like the fucking horrific star wipe, like editing and all this kind of shit.
I guess so, buddy. But look, man, Look, man, we're not here to talk about the editing.
No, we're here to talk about the continuation of the McAllister saga.
Yes, and as Tom pointed out, it is about the McAllister family. We're following on. The scene is set. It is Christmas time again, thank God, and we are in the McAllister household. The mum is there, different actress, still a redhead, thank God. We've got little brother Buzz is... being a dick still, but not in anywhere near as appealing a way.
Yeah. When you say little brother, because he's not Kevin's little brother. He's his older brother, but he is now significantly younger than he was in any of the other films, as is Kevin.
Yep.
Who else have we got?
We've got the sister Megan.
Yep.
And that's it.
Yeah. There are two children missing, including your boy, who is like, Kevin, you're such a disease.
I know.
Like, how, when you were making a sequel to something, do you like, I know no one gives a shit about the made-for-TV Home Alone 4, but you just think that they would like go to at least the trouble of having the right amount of children for the family.
Well, that's not all of the family that's missing, Tom, because when we first see little Kevin McAllister, played by a child actor called Mike Weinberg, he's got some chops. He's all right, little Mike Weinberg. And we find him and he is in his bed. He is watching home movies.
He's looking sad, like he does at the beginning of every Home Alone film. So they got that right.
He's in bed. He's looking sad. He's watching the home movies of Last Christmas. And it was a gut punch. I was like, oh my God, someone's dead.
Well, I mean, at least two people, you would assume.
And the mum comes in and she's like, hey, I know you're sad. And he's like, but how are we going to have a proper Christmas? And she's like, look, it's the same old Christmas. We're going to do all those same things that you love. Your dad just won't be there.
Like, wow.
Heavy.
Yeah.
But he's not dead. No. They're getting divorced.
Still fun for a kids' film.
Yeah, I know.
At Christmas. And then there's a bit where, like Kevin's asking the mum, like, why did you split up? And she's like, it's not easy to explain. And at this point you go like, yeah, I mean, the inner workings of, like, the Yellow King and all of that lore, it is difficult to explain. And then she's like, we got into a rut. And I was like, okay. But well, still.
Well, she said they got into a rut. So just a reminder for listeners, the timeline of this, it's taking place immediately after Home Alone 2, but before Home Alone 3, where the Yellow King catches up with the mum's lost soul and they merge to create the hellscape for Mrs. Hess. So that hasn't happened yet. So in this timeline of the movie, the mum's severed soul is still out in the universe, which means that the physical body of the mum is the Yellow King operating without emotions, but the sort of the Shining, the psychic link. So what she's doing here is she's presenting to her son as if she has emotions, but really her and the dad have split up for two reasons. One, because she has no more soul and emotions. That's going to take a toll on the marriage. Reason number two, the Yellow King ate two of their children. Just gone.
Yeah.
That's, you know, the dude that says, Kevin, you're such a disease, and then the other girl that says, you are what the French call les incompetents.
Yeah.
Those kids are gone. Yellow King ate them. The dad is like, enough of this.
Well, I mean, do you think that the dad is aware of this, or do you think that the mum has used her shining power, as was established in Home Alone 2, to kind of almost cleanse those memories out?
Well, it's possible, because there is a lot of Yellow King style cleansing going on, because on the dining room table there's a massive bowl, a fruit bowl, right? Bearing in mind it's dining room table, not kitchen table. It's got 11 lemons in it. Yellow lemons, obviously, for the Yellow King and for the cleansing power of lemons. You know, lemons are nature's cleanser. But keep your lemons in the kitchen, right, where you might chop them, not on the dining room table. Not fucking 11 of them.
Those are show lemons.
For a family of four.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying there's some heavy repping going on, and the Yellow King is like, fine, I'm like moving into the space, cleanse the space, got rid of the dad, whatever.
Yeah.
Powering on, show of emotion for the kids, you know, want to understand what this Christmas malarkey is about.
Yeah.
While she's trying to figure out where her soul has gone. And we know what will happen with that, obviously. That's in the next movie.
It's nice to fill in that gap. I mean, I have some other theories about what is going on in this film, but we'll get to that in a bit.
There's
a very important character that appears, and there's some very dark things going on with this character.
All right.
Okay. Anyway, so, like, big shake-up to the lore here that, like, the dad is out of the picture, and he's got a new missus. And he shows up at the house, doesn't he, to like tell Mrs. McAllister, or the former Mrs. McAllister, or soon to be former Mrs. McAllister, that he's getting married.
Yes, to Natalie, his new girlfriend. Now, they've only been separated for 8 months. Already he's getting married. That is quite quick there, yeah, lover boy.
And he does say, like, oh, it's just a quick thing. That's just how it is. And everyone's kind of like, yeah, whatever, mate. Well, what's it? It's a midlife crisis, really, isn't it?
The whole movie does get very kind of hyper-real here, because the dad is telling the mum this because he wants some of the kids, any of the kids, really, to come and spend Christmas with him and his new fiancée. Right?
So they can get to know her better.
And the way that he tries to make this an appealing concept for Kevin as he sits down and he goes, well, we're going to have the royal family coming to visit this Christmas, and they have a little boy about your age. Doesn't that sound fun? And at this point, I'm like, bullshit, man. You've got the royal family coming to visit you and your new fiancé on Christmas Day.
Does he even say the royal family or just a royal family? Just a nondescript royal family from a country that is never referenced.
And it's so fucking weird because, yeah, I don't know what's weirder, that he would tell this lie or that later on in the movie it fucking turns out to be true.
Yeah, a royal family shows up and then you're like, a royal family showing up at Christmas also just doesn't make any sense, because you're going to have, like, a royal family, you're going to have some, like, festive obligations. Like, you know, we've got, like, the Queen does her speech and all that.
They're not
going to
stay at, like, the house of a private citizen in Chicago.
We find out what the dad does for a living. Apparently he's a publicist. We see, like, the house that he lives in with his new missus, and it's a fucking huge, huge mansion. And they're talking about, like, oh, I can't believe you raised, like, $2 million at the something benefit, stuff like this. And you're like, what kind of a publicist is he? Has he made all this money? But then I think it turns out that, no, the house is actually her house.
Yeah, Natalie, her name.
It's Natalie's house, but we never find out what Natalie does and why Natalie is, like, mates with, like, the royal family of Nowheresville.
I think she's just a fund... I think she's independently wealthy and is employed as a fundraiser, which is why she kind of rubs shoulders with the hoity-toity.
I mean, anything could be true because we don't get told, so, I mean, your guess is as good as anyone's.
Yeah, so... It's an odd setup straight away, and then the mum has to go out somewhere in this nondescript. She just goes.
She has to go and
out.
Do something, and so she leaves. Oh, Megan goes off to some Christmas play rehearsal.
At the teen centre.
Yeah, we never see the teen centre.
What is a teen centre?
Yeah, I don't know. We never see the teen centre. We never see where the mum goes, because this film has two sets.
Yeah,
it is in the McAllister house and Natalie's house, and that's your fucking lot. And then, so you get Kevin left home alone. Oh, no, Buzz is babysitting him, and then we get a really shit montage of Buzz making Kevin do loads of chores.
Yeah, he says, clean it, cheese face.
Good, it's a classic Buzz line.
I was, at least call him a trans sniffer.
Yeah, right? And then, like, Kevin's just really fucked off when the mum gets home, because he's annoyed about mum and dad splitting up. He's annoyed about having a family. He wishes he was an only child. He just obviously really wants the other two kids to be eaten by the Yellow King. And he's a bit like, I really wish that I, you know, didn't have any brothers or sisters. I wish I was an only child. And it's really kind of riffing on the kind of, certainly in the first film, I think maybe a little bit in the second film, that this whole thing of Kevin making a wish about his family and implying that there is magic involved in some way, perhaps. But this is so lazily thrown out. And then there's no, like, all these, like, machinations outside of Kevin's control that mean that his wish comes true. It's not like, oh, the alarm clock doesn't go off and people, they do the head count wrong and they get on the wrong plane and all this kind of shit. In this film, Kevin is never home alone.
No.
In this, at no point in this film is he not in a house with no one else.
Yeah, there's none of that.
Always accompanied. So he's never home alone, and his wish of being an only child is realised by himself
paying for a taxi to go to Natalie's place.
It's very self-actualizing.
Yeah, but it's just like they're going, I really wish I did. Oh, actually, I can do that. Like,
yeah, that's kind of a cool lesson. You can make your dreams come true, buddy. And yeah, he pays with his piggy bank, gets in a cab, and he turns up at Natalie's house. Kind of uninvited.
The dad invited. So the just dad come invited, over any time. It's an open invitation.
Yeah. And it's this huge mansion and everything is voice controlled. You say music on, the music comes on. You say door open, the doors open. And this, as I guess it probably would if I was nine, absolutely enchants Kevin. This is the greatest place. He never, ever, ever, ever wants to leave.
Now, you see this house, yeah? I have some theories and some issues with this house.
All right, hit a brother up.
This house is absolutely horrible to look at because it is such a set. It is such a display home. It is so unreal and it is huge. Every single room in this house is absolutely vast and it really creeped me out. And it's just this kind of like these big empty voids. Like it looks like it's not lived in at all. This does not look like a place where people actually live. Like Kevin's like, oh, everyone's always lying on top of made beds. You never, like, people never get in bed. They don't actually really live in this house.
It's not cozy at all.
No, and I found it very unsettling. And then I started to feel that maybe in some way, and I'm not entirely sure like how this works, and like within the time frame of what we know about the Yellow King and Kevin's mum's soul, that almost maybe that this reality that we're seeing, this is not the reality from the first two films.
Right.
This is a fever dream of Kevin's mum's lost soul.
Okay.
And in much the way how in like Home Alone 3, we have this alternate reality created by the Yellow King and the merging of Kevin's mum's soul. This is just a dream that she is having about everything that she has lost.
Yeah.
Specifically Kevin. And she's created, she is the house.
Oh!
And she's meant to be this enchanting, like, you know, technologically advanced house that's also designed to keep Kevin safe. But it is not cozy. It's not a home. Mm-hmm. If anything, the rooms just get bigger and bigger and get further and further away. She can never be close to Kevin.
Oh.
And then she's losing sight of what Kevin and her family actually is. This is why she's separated from her husband. This is why some of the children don't exist. This is why all the characters have been recast, because everything's screwy, everything is upside down and whacked out. But like, it's the house. The house is like this dream version of Kevin's mum's soul.
I think you're definitely onto something there. And that's it's very clear that the house is alive, and it would, I feel like the soul would picture itself as a home, as something warming, as something welcoming, but it's just there's something...
It's not wrong.
Yeah, even though it's clearly self-aware because everything's voice-activated. So
yeah,
it's self-aware, but it's dysfunctional. Now,
at the end of the film, like, Kevin, they reject the home.
Yeah. There's some interesting stuff that happens then well. But I have a slight... there's one thing, I think there's an extra element going on, maybe.
Which
explains the change in faces and the recasting.
Okay, yeah.
It's a lot simpler, because I think the house definitely is the soul. But I think the reason that everybody looks different, because it doesn't make sense, for example, that, spoiler alert, listener, we're about to introduce Marv.
Yes.
Played this time, one of the crooks, was previously played by Daniel Stern, now played by French Stewart from Third Rock from the Sun. Well, why is he looking so different? Because the mum never saw him. She only ever briefly saw Joe Pesci, right?
And
so she wouldn't know what he looked like to have him look different anyway.
And Marv knows Kevin's name and Kevin knows Marv's name. And they never exchange names in either of these films.
All
they know is that he is McAllister.
So here's what I think is going
on. Okay, yeah.
I think we're experiencing the story of Mrs. McAllister's soul as the house.
Yeah.
But through the audience surrogate of Marv.
Okay.
As he lies on the pavement in New York after having bricks thrown at his head. So that is going to cause some neurological damage very extensively. So it is kind of... He's been knocked into that next reality. He's wandering around in the soul's fever dream, right? But dude has got a fucking brick lodged in his frontal lobe.
Yeah, yeah.
He's forgotten his own face. He has forgotten how he is supposed to talk.
Yeah.
He has forgotten that his best mate fucking exists.
Yeah.
He has no idea who he is or what's going on. He suffered a serious head trauma and he's just bumbling through going, I think I'm supposed to be chasing the kid. He's small. I could just remember that he's small. So
this is why he's so off, because, like, yeah, he's dressed like Marv, but he's wearing Harry's beanie hat. In this film, Marv is married.
Yeah, because what fucking why not?
But then this is very interesting, this point. Okay, you've cracked this wide open, because Marv descends into this this kind of like fantasy realm after being hit in the face with the brick.
But it's not his dream, is it?
No, but he's been knocked into somebody else's dreamscape. And then he comes back out of that dreamscape in Home Alone 2 after being hit in the bricks with the, when he's and he continues with the rest of the caper. And there is a definite point where, like, I think he must escape in this film.
Yeah, which is quite near the end. As we see him go, he thinks it's over, and then he wakes up from that bleary-eyed. What am I doing? Oh yeah, okay. I'm Marv. You're Harry. That's the kid. I'm chasing him. Right, I got my shit together. And then he goes in the house.
Oh, man. This is some deep shit in this film.
Yeah, so it's a tiny sliver of time that this takes place, but he gets knocked into the upside down, if you will, which, the closest magic realist entity to him is the bird lady, pigeon lady, a.k.a. Mrs. McAllister's soul, a.k.a. the self-aware house.
Hot damn.
Mic drop.
We've done it.
High five, Tom.
We cracked it. Okay.
So anyway, now we're all on the same page.
Okay,
as to what's
so now
going
everybody
on.
Knows what's going on with this fucking house, yeah.
So as Tom said, we're introduced to Marv, and now he's got a wife who is called Vera. And I've got to say, she is kind of a highlight of the movie. She's really funny.
I really like her. I like French Stewart in this, although he is not Marv. Categorically is not that character.
No.
And I do not know what accent he is doing, but it is fucking bizarre.
It is the accent you would do if you had been hit in the head with three or four bricks.
I think he's trying to do kind of like a tough New York-y kind of accent, but then every now and then he goes a little bit Canadian, eh?
Darling, we're moving up to the big money, all right? The easy money. No middleman, pure profit. Strictly a class operation, huh?
You know what else? As a big fan of Third Rock from the Sun and seeing French Stewart play Harry Solomon, it's so weird watching him play the role with his fucking eyes open.
Yeah, right? Who knew he had those?
Yeah. And extra confusing at times because in certain shots, the lady playing Vera, his wife, looks a little bit like Sally Solomon.
Yeah, I definitely think they've tried to count. They couldn't get Sally Solomon, and so they've cast her as like a close second.
Yeah. Which is weird, because in that they're brother and sister, but in this they're husband and wife.
Very weird. Anyway, so their caper is like Harry's... No, Harry's not there, and Marv's like, Harry's not here. His plans always get me into prison. Now, I'm not going to do any more robberies. We're doing kidnapping. We're going to kidnap the royal prince when he shows up for Christmas. Yeah, shut up. And then we'll, this is easy money. That's the caper. And then we've got a few other characters in the house. So we've got Mr. Prescott, the snooty butler.
Yes. Now, he is played by a very recognisable actor called Eric Avari. He's doing a bit of a Tim Curry impression in his voice. But I know him best as he's in Stargate as one of the alien fake Egyptian guys.
Oh, okay.
Guys. He's also in Independence Day.
Is he in the Stargate TV series?
Yeah, he's in both.
And the film?
And the film.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, nice, okay. He's actually really good. Like,
yeah, he's great.
He's like, the supporting cast in this are pretty on point. It's like the McAllisters who I had a bit more of a tough time with. But like, he's great. He's channeling a bit of Tim Curry.
Yeah. He's very like, this is not a toy. This house is not a toy.
And then we've also got the other, the housekeeper, Molly.
Now, I've got a lot to say about Molly, Tom.
Okay, hit me.
Well, number one, another redhead. What the fuck? Keep your fetishes out of my children's movies, casting director. Number two, actress that played Molly is in Salem's Lot.
Oh, okay.
So a bit another Stephen King connection.
Yeah. Fucking hell. So it's like an onion, this franchise.
Yeah, it just keeps going deeper.
Yeah.
And she is, if you want to talk about weird accents.
Yeah, it's kind of Irish, but also she can't be bothered to do Irish all the time. So it's just like pretty all over the place.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
I am?
Yeah, you do have an overactive imagination.
But that's what I love about children. My own son was the same as you at your age. A real handful.
And she's meant to be this kind of like grandmother figure who just wants to give everything to Kevin. She's the opposite of Prescott.
And like, we just get all this stuff where like Natalie is really trying to impress Kevin. Like he's there for a few days and every morning he gets given a new toy. That you're like, oh, hello, that's Chekhov's new toy. I wonder if this is going to, you know, play any part in the finale of this film. So he gets like a big remote control aeroplane one day. He gets like a recordable spy kit.
Yeah, the spy kit's pretty fun.
It's like the Talk Boy from Home Alone 2, but like jacked up. Natalie and Dad, they have to go out for a bit, and this is the point where Marv and Mrs. Marv, they're like, right, we're gonna case the joint. We're gonna like check out the lay of the land so that when we come back tomorrow, we know where to go to kidnap the prince. And they get into the house because they've got one of these voice activated controls, like what they have in the house. So they're like door open and they just walk on in.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because Mrs. McAllister's soul is very welcoming to them. You know, she's kind of all raw emotion and she will just welcome anyone that she can at this point. And Marv, in his sort of blind stupor, I think the brick has obviously taken away. You know how people talk about things like the lizard brain? You ever heard anyone refer to the lizard brain?
No, tell me about it.
So it's this idea that as the human brain evolved, basically the most basic primal raw instincts, they're all at the very center of the brain, and that the human brain kind of developed over time from the inside out. Mm. So each more, the closer to the surface of the brain you get, that's where the more sophisticated things are. And one of the things that sort of separate humans from lizards, supposedly, is like the idea of a conscience.
Mm-hmm.
So that, because that is one of the frontal lobe, like outer portions of the brain. So that is what the brick would take out. So all that remains is the very core, the most protected parts of his brain, which are the bits that have like no conscience, the most ruthless, like killer instinct, law of the jungle bits. And that's why in this, like Marv is just like, I'm going to go in that house and I'm just going to fucking take everything. I'm just going to fuck everything up. And like, I don't care how welcoming Mrs. McAllister's soul is.
Yeah.
And also probably why he's so mean to his wife.
Yeah, like I think there's one point where he basically just punches her in the face in this film. It's like, dude, come on, man. And Kev obviously sees Marv and the missus, they break in and he
foils them with the shower.
With the shower, which is basically like they have one of those like fancy wet room kind of shower things with like the jets that come out the side of the wall. But these jets are like the kind of ones that police use to like hose down protesters in a riot. And it just floods the entire house.
In seconds. It's too strong. This shower is too strong that if you turn it on, the entire house will be flooded in.
I'm surprised they're alive.
Yeah.
And it literally washes them out the front door. And then Natalie and Dad come back and find that like the floor is completely flooded. And like Natalie starts hyperventilating. Mr. Prescott is like, no, I didn't see any burglars here.
I was in the loo.
Yeah. And then this is when Kevin gets really fucking shirty with them. And then this is what sets in motion this whole thing of Kevin doesn't like the divorce. He's trying to break up Dad and Natalie. And he doesn't trust Mr. Prescott. And then we get a little bit where Marv is back in his van and they're all like wet. And he's like, oh, don't worry. I got a guy on the inside.
Yeah. So it's all, you know, we start to suspect just as Kevin does. So Kevin goes into Prescott's office and starts to do some snooping. And there's this great fucked up bit of editing where Prescott walks in to find Kevin in his office. Kevin looks around and screams and goes, ah! and it fades out. And then, like, before it's even finished fading out, Prescott goes, "What are you doing?
What are you doing here? Tell me."
So badly done.
Yeah.
And
so Molly, the maid, comes and takes him away and is like, "You need to stay away from Prescott. He's not a very nice man."
Yeah. And then...
Sorry, no, she says, "You need to stay away from Prescott. He's not a very nice man.
My name Molly.
Kindly old lady on my donkey."
And then Kevin says to her, like, "Oh, there's the burglars. They were here. And I think Prescott, like, was helping them." And this is the point where you go, "Well, no, it's obviously Molly." Now you said that, like, it's obviously Molly who is the person on the inside, and it fucking well is.
I mean, it is. I've got to say, I thought it was going to be Natalie was the person on the inside.
They do kind, yeah, that kind of floats out there. But, like, her villainy is just that she's rich.
She's rich and doesn't see, like, children very much.
Yeah, she just doesn't see the value in family and stuff. So that's, like... her villainy, and that's why she gets her comeuppance at the end of the film, just for living her life the way that she wants to live it.
Yeah. And we first get an inkling of this during a very strange scene where the dad, his new wife Natalie, and little Kevin McAllister all attempt to decorate the Christmas tree together.
Oh my god.
So the scene is interesting for me almost entirely because of the music. Jingle bells, jingle bells. Is that Jingle Bells? Is that actually Jingle Bells?
It's a pretty out there interpretation. And, like, during this scene, they're all dancing around the tree. They're just throwing shit at the tree. Like, this is not how you decorate a tree. It looks like an absolute fucking state. But then they decorate the tree to try and make Kevin feel more at home. And then the next morning, Natalie's taking the tree down and put up, like, this fancy, like, you know, like... properly, like you know, when you would get in a shopping mall, like a very soulless tree.
It does look better, her version. I will give her that. Her version is professionally decorated and looks good.
Yeah, because they were just flailing around it like they were doing some sort of pagan ritual and just throwing shit at it. But yes, still.
This is where we start to realise that Natalie is maybe a bit of a wrong'un.
Yeah. Now, there's something else I got to point out in this film. You know, like, how all the other Home Alone films are set, like, they at least have some scenes that are set in Chicago and it's fucking billowing with snow?
Yeah.
This film was filmed in South Africa.
Yeah, and there's a fucking amazing bit where Mrs. McAllister is driving to go and visit Kevin at Natalie's house, and it's supposed to be Christmas Eve in Chicago, and they drive... through the desert.
Yeah.
It's an actual desert.
Well, they try and explain it away by having Mr. Prescott say that, like, "Oh, it's unseasonably warm this year." It's so unseasonably warm that just a part of Chicago has just been wiped out and turned into barren wasteland.
It's so weird. I was so pleased that you spotted that. Anyway, okay, so the plot starts to pick up pace a little bit when Natalie goes, "All right, I'm off to the airport to pick up the royal family." Which is just, as you casually say, pops off in a car to go to the airport to pick up the royal family.
But before that, the royal family don't show up, do they, on the first day?
Well, this is when... Oh, you're right. This is when...
They are on their way to pick up the royal family, and then when they're in the car, the royal family phone up and go, like, "Sorry, we're snowed in. We must be in some other part of Chicago or something. Like, we're in the real Chicago." And they can't make it. And they're having a big Christmas party. Natalie's having this big Christmas party, and she wants to... she needs something big. She needs something big to, like, be like, "Oh, fuck, the royal family aren't here. How am I going to impress the guests?" And she's like, "Dad, how about we announce our engagement at the party?" And the dad's a bit reluctant, but he's like, "Yeah, okay, let's give it a go." Like, the bad guys show up.
Yeah, Marv and Mrs. Marv, they're disguised as waiters.
Yeah, and this, like, makes... and they get let in by Prescott, which just feeds in more into Kevin's thing that, like, Prescott is the man on the inside. So much so that he locks Prescott in the walk-in freezer.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, holy shit, he's just killed Prescott. we get a little bit of slapstick where, like, you know, like... Marv and Mrs. Marv, they get like some hot fondue thrown on them.
Yeah,
and, like,
that bit's quite good.
Marv like sets fire to himself on the oven, but Natalie's about to announce that they're going to get married, and Kevin ruins it by like kind of like running in and like knocking shit over, and Marv and Mrs. Marv follow, and like it's just like a bit of a mess ensues. But there's like the one funny bit that I actually liked from this film is that you find out what happened to Mr. Prescott in the freezer. There's a bit where like where Natalie is making her announcement, and she sees this weird ice sculpture in the middle of the table, and you can clearly see that Mr. Prescott is frozen inside of that ice sculpture. And I was like, thank you, film. That was good. I needed that.
Nice. I know, me too. Because you know what else, what other film has a villainous man being locked in a freezer?
What's that?
The Shining. Just saying.
Okay, yeah.
There is another quite funny bit in this where there's a complicated set piece about Marv trying to test out this grappling hook that they're going to use to escape out the window. And
yeah.
He's like lodged the hooky part of the grappling hook on a door and is kind of demonstrating lowering themselves out the window. And then Kevin uses the voice command to be like, open door. So it opens the door, releases the grappling hook, and the like hook part slides straight across the room, and it goes up Marv's butthole.
Like, yeah, it, like, it's pretty brutal.
No way around it. He's got this jagged, like a giant fishing hook lodged in his butthole. I mean, yes. Yes, mate.
Yeah.
Yes, mate.
That's pretty brutal. So, like, the royal family, they're going to come the next day, and Natalie is really fucked off with Kevin now for ruining her party. Now she goes full on evil stepmom and is like, if you, you know, like, fuck things up for me anymore, you'll never see your dad again.
Which is so brutal. She's a proper wicked stepmom.
Yeah. And I kind of liked that, like, for a bit in the film, they were kind of holding off going full wicked stepmom. I was kind of like, you know, Natalie doesn't seem that bad. She just doesn't really know how to connect to kids. And then it's just like, oh no, she is just like a generic wicked stepmom. And you can see the cracks start to form in her relationship with dad because she doesn't get the idea of rewatching films.
Yes. Now that is the straight away the sign that someone is not to be trusted, because the dad is watching It's a Wonderful Life and he's like, oh yeah, we do this every year. And Natalie's like, ugh, how could you ever rewatch a film? You watch it once and you move on with your life. No, Natalie. No, not in my house.
So then we get to Christmas morning, which is signposted by Kevin walking downstairs and going, Christmas morning! Because you have no idea that it's really Christmas morning, because we are in the arid South African-esque desert of Chicago, where it is unseasonably warm.
I just thought that was maybe part of his self-actualization ritual, and to give himself that motivational boost. Every day, no matter what day it is, he walks downstairs and is like, February the 14th!
Yeah, and he's standing there by the Christmas tree, and you can just see the magnitude of just the foyer of this house. Like, Kevin's mum's soul house is getting even bigger. The foyer is the size of my house. Like, it's a building in itself.
Which is so sad, because that's like, she's, you know, it's almost as if the more love swells in her soul, the bigger her soul gets with
the
love.
She can't get close.
Yeah, exactly. It's keeping her further away.
And so it's Christmas morning. Kevin wants to open the presents. And then Natalie's like, nope, me and your dad have got to go and pick up the royal family that we've been talking about for the whole film. And I'm just like, this royal family is never going to show up.
If we don't pick them up, they'll be stranded.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, they have no means. They're from like some country that even has no name. Maybe the monarchy in their country has actually fallen. You know, they're like Russian royalty and they've had to like escape a revolution.
Oh, God, is that the charity she works for? Is like helping fallen, like, royal people that have fallen on hard times.
Rehouse orphan royalty.
God.
And so, like, Kev is like, oh, okay, you're just going to leave me home alone. And you're kind of like, oh, he's actually finally home alone. He's like, oh, no, actually, Mr. Prescott and Molly are still there. He's never home alone in this film.
That's fine, because this is where we get the twist. Tom, you were right. Molly the maid is evil. She just straight up she goes up to Kevin and says, I'm the inside man.
Yeah, this is after Kevin has locked Mr. Prescott in the basement, because he sees that Marv and Mrs. Marv, they're coming in to burgle the house, to kidnap somebody, whatever the plan was, I don't know. And he's locked him in the basement and he's telling Molly, he's like, Molly, I did a really good thing. I locked up the inside man. It's Mr. Prescott.
And she goes, no, 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 I'm the inside man. And we're all like, oh shit, son. And at that exact point, Marv walks in the back door, looks at Molly and goes, Mom!
Yes!
Oh, shit, son!
This explains why both of their accents are so fucked up. It's a family thing.
Yeah, either that or, like, I wasn't sure if that's him, that's, like, the blood starting to pool in his brain as he lies on the pavement in New York.
And either
basically,
is valid.
He's dying. Like, I think in real life, his mum is probably dead.
Yeah.
And in this fever dream, he's starting, that's, like, the tunnel to
heaven
opening. Mum!
And she's like, yeah, come into the light, do one last job. Yeah,
yeah, come into the big, welcoming, cavernous
house. Do you think that
house.
Means that Mrs. Marv is actually dead as well? That she died before the events of Home Alone 1?
Well, I just thought that she might be like an imaginary friend, you know, because we know from the start of Home Alone 2 that he's a very lonely man and not very lucky with the ladies, right?
Yeah.
There's that bit where...
Oh, yeah. Hello.
Oh, hello. I love that bit. It just doesn't seem that believable that Vera would give him any time in real life.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, maybe she's the one that got away and he never even got close to.
Yeah, like you know, maybe a girl from a poster in his childhood bedroom
or
something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sally from The Drop from the Sun.
Whoa! We only can't remember her face quite right.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, he has been hit in the face with a brick.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. Okay, right. And then they lock Kevin in the basement as well. So now he's in there with Mr. Prescott. Mr. Prescott, suddenly, nicest fucking guy in the world. He seems lovely. I would love to go for a pint with him. He seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah, just a delightful fellow.
Yeah, they really bond. Like, Mr. Prescott, like, they sit around there for ages wondering what to do. Mr. Prescott goes, like, oh, I've got a phone. Gets out a mobile phone. Apparently, he has no one to call. Because then, like, he just, like, lets... Like, they don't phone the police. Kevin tries to phone his mum because Kevin obviously has a real fear of the police, like, because he's never called them in any of these films.
Which is a waste of time anyway because Kevin's mum has The Shining and would have known that Kevin was in trouble.
And she does because he can't get through on the phone. They get cut off and then she's like, right, I'm going to go and drive through the arid deserts of Chicago to see my son.
And also, Kevin's dad now seems to have developed a bit of The Shining because he's like, I've got to go home and check on Kevin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Natalie doesn't like that. She's like, we're about to pick up the royal family, you prick. And
he's like, we've been signposting the royal family for so long. Don't you want this reveal? Don't you want this payoff? And he's like, nah, not really. I'm not that invested. I'm off.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back at the house, Kevin has managed to escape the cellar by going up through the dumbwaiter.
Yeah.
And there's a weird bit here where I have got something to say. So he plays a bit of a jape on Marv and the imaginary Mrs. Marv.
Yeah.
With this sort of secret bookshelf door. It's like, you know, like from the old movies, there's like a bookshelf that spins around. It's got a secret room behind
it. Yeah,
yeah. And Marv and Mrs. Marv, like, are on it. Kevin goes, open sesame. And it spins around and traps them. And then he starts fucking with them a bit more. He's like, spin faster, sesame. Spin even faster, sesame. Keep spinning, sesame. But I realised he's not saying open sesame or spin faster, sesame. He's saying open ses-a-me. Like Mario would say,
it's-a-me.
It's-a-me, Mario. He's going, open ses-a-me. Spin faster, ses-a-me. And that is not the saying. Like, that is not the phrase. It's from fucking Arabian Nights. It's open sesame. It's a thing. No. And I get that, like, little boy Mike Weinberg wouldn't have probably read that book.
Yeah.
But fucking somebody on set should have been like, nah, you're saying it wrong, bruh.
I mean, you're really thinking that anyone in this film was invested in any way, shape or form.
That made me so angry.
No,
it is not open says a me. It isn't.
No, and
it was the best of times. It was the blessed of times.
It's a me, a Kevin McAllister. And like... So this is like the slapsticky house fight bit, and it's the weakest of all of the films because all the bits are so padded. Like, there's a bit where, like, Kevin goes, I've got to save, protect the house. If I don't, no one will. I'm going to set up two traps. I'm going to tie a big pot to a rope in the kitchen.
Clever.
And I'm going to put a chain in the lift that the house has. So Molly gets in the lift and then the lift stops halfway between floors because there's a chain.
And she's stuck.
Yep, and then he uses his walkie-talkie spy kit to record... He recorded some of the stuff that Marv and Mrs. Marv were saying, and he edits it together to sound like Marv is, like slagging off Mrs. Marv.
Yeah, the phrase he makes it sound like Marv is saying is, "Shut up, you bag."
she's like, "Yo, you think I'm a bag?" And she slaps him in the face. And that's it? Like, it's not like a big...
Yeah.
Bit. Oh, he flies his remote control plane straight into Marv's dick, and yeah, it's quite harrowing. Like, the look on his face, like, he's already, like, lost his asshole, and now I think he's probably lost his wanger.
Peen plane. And then at the last possible moment... Marv and Mrs. Marv, like, fall down the stairs, and then they play this music. They're dead.
Yes, this is what I thought. It's like, holy fuck, they've killed them. But this is what I was thinking, is that maybe, do you think this is the point where Marv then transitions back onto the street in Home Alone 2?
Yeah, absolutely.
So this fantasy is done. This fantasy has taken place in a matter of, like, seconds in the real world.
Yeah. And then that's why he wakes up. He tries to tell Harry about it. He's like, "Hey, baby, hey, baby, hey, baby, hey, baby, hey." And then his speech faculties come back, and all he can remember is that he fucking hates that little boy.
Yeah. But then back in the fantasy, like, we're kind of like, holy shit, they're dead.
So
and then
is.
The royal family are there.
This is the great, it fucking goes nuclear. There's so much. I feel like we need to do like 10 minutes on every 10 seconds because so much happens. Natalie shows up with the royal family, who is apparently a lady in her mid 20s and a weird Children of the Corn blonde boy.
Yeah.
And they're like, "Right, hello, we're here at this private house and there seem to be some criminals being arrested, whatever." For no reason at all, the dad goes off on this very, very adult emotional conversation with his kids where he basically says, "Look, guys, the quote is, I mistook infatuation for love. And I love your mother." So he's basically saying, like, Natalie was a hot piece.
Yeah.
And like, you can't have that conversation with your kids. And then the mum and dad get back together, which is a fucking terrible message for a kids' film, that divorce is temporary.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Even in Mrs. Doubtfire, arguably probably one of the all-time great children's movies about divorce, at the end of that movie, they are still divorced. That is an important lesson for kids and a good takeaway. Not this fucking film, where like, I'll just wait it out. Yeah, if your parents are still divorced, it's your fault, kids, for not having saved the day in a wacky way. And then, like, inexplicably, Prescott, the butler, shows up and hands in his resignation. He's like, "Life is too short." Gives Kevin a high five, right? And then, like, so Prescott's resigning. And Natalie says to her, like, at the moment, fiancé, "Peter, do something." What? What does she expect him to do to stop the butler from resigning? What, like, hold him prisoner? Call the police? Like, what the fuck does she want?
Who knows? And then she starts hyperventilating, and then everyone's kind of like, "Ha, it's good because she's had her comeuppance because, you know, she was kind of mean, but, like, she wasn't... I know she's meant to be an evil stepmom, but she's not, like, the worst person in the world." But it's kind of like, "Ha ha, she's lonely."
Yeah. And then to make matters worse, this is the bit that we really, really need to hyper zoom in on. The fucking queen of the royal family, who is younger than Natalie is, goes up to Kevin and, like, kneels down all friendly. And she says,
"Young man, how are we ever going to show you our gratitude?
Would your family like to spend Christmas with our family?
That sounds cool."
No, it doesn't! You're a prince!
Hey, they're perfect strangers. And then, like, Kevin's mum must be like, "Well, I only really had enough things for, like, 3 or 4 people max for, like, doing a Christmas dinner. Now I'm suddenly back with the dad. I probably want to go and bone down with him for a little bit. I've got to mourn my other 2 dead children. And then, like, now I've got to feed some royals." And, like, I think they're pauper royals.
That makes a lot of sense.
And then we finish the film with CGI snow because we're in South fucking Africa.
Well, this is the most telling shot of the entire film. This is the, like, huge payoff, right? This is the equivalent of the end of The Usual Suspects, where you look at the end of the cup and it says, like, Kobayashi on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, spoiler alert for the end of Usual Suspects. It's all right.
Mr. Kobayashi did it.
Yeah. Good one.
because as the camera's panning out to try and celebrate this amazing moment, Kevin uses the voice controller and he says, the same voice controller where you can be like, door open, music on, curtains closed, that kind of thing. And he says, snow on. And then it starts to snow. But they're outside of the house. How does the voice controller control the fucking weather?
Because this is a fantasy created by Kevin's mum's soul.
Well, almost, Tom.
Yeah.
It is a fantasy. The house is Kevin's mum's soul. But what else happened in that scene before that has not happened yet? The Yellow King in Kevin's mum's body arrived and embraced Kevin in the house. They've merged. They've become the all-powerful. So, you know, the body has developed the kind of omnipotent power of the soul house. That's been absorbed. Mm. The soul house has regained its memories, knows exactly what's going on, then kind of expands to take over the whole wider hellscape. So it's very much like at the end of Lawnmower Man, where all of the world's telephones ring all at once.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what this now frees them to do?
Mm.
The events of Home Alone 3, where they can start creating bigger,
this is the birth of the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know who wrote Lawnmower Man? Stephen King.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I didn't even fucking know that!
He did. Although, like, the film has absolutely nothing to do with the short story, and Stephen King demanded that they take his name off of it, and they kept on just putting it back on. But still, there's a connection, and that's all we need.
It all works out. So that is interesting. Because that means that obviously it depends that the timeline's been crushed, right? Because in Home Alone 2, Marv gets up off the pavement probably about 15 minutes from the end of that film.
Yeah.
At that point, the soul and the body are still separate, Kevin's mum and the pigeon lady.
Yeah.
Right? So then the events that transpire in Home Alone 4, it's about 10 minutes of screen time, right? From that point, tops, 10 minutes of screen time. But in the real world, it's maybe that it's not until the next day, at least. The next day, we know that the mum and the soul and the pigeon lady are separate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But don't forget that Home Alone 2 ends with Kevin's mum finding Kevin. You know, they wake up the next morning, it's Christmas, it's in the hotel room. And then Kevin runs to go and meet the pigeon lady in Central Park.
Mm-hmm.
Simultaneously, the mum and dad finding out the bill and getting really angry, then the credits roll. So what obviously happens immediately after those credits roll is the mum and dad run out to Central Park, find Kevin with the pigeon lady, the souls are absorbed. Right?
They meet.
Yeah, and this coincides with the Yellow King in Home Alone 4 arriving at the house, embracing Kevin, and it's starting to snow.
Yes.
So it's not even that there's like, we're jumping around back and forth in timelines. The end scenes of Home Alone 2 and Home Alone 4 happen simultaneously.
Man, this is wild.
But at different speeds.
Yeah.
So the last 10 minutes of Home Alone 4 is the last sort of 48 hours of Home Alone 2.
Shit.
It's big, man.
It's big. Fucking hell. There's some serious shit going on in this franchise. Oh, doggy, and we're going to have to find out how this crazy wagon train ends when we come back next week for the final movie in the Home Alone franchise, Home Alone, The Holiday Heist.
We'll be at the bitter end, buddy.
I know, right?
What a crazy time. What do you want to see from The Holiday Heist?
I have a feeling that it's not going to be the McAllisters, so I feel that we're going to now go further forward and explore the Yellow King's kind of like hellscape that he's created in 3.
Mm.
I'm very much looking forward to seeing Malcolm McDowell as one of the bad guys in this, because I love Malcolm McDowell, because he will do anything. Most of it is usually a bit whack. But he's always kind of like, you know, like he's always like the star of whatever piece of shit he's in. So I'm looking forward to that, although I'm a bit worried. I mean, he's an old guy and I'm worried about him getting like a pot of paint in the face. I don't know, man. What do you want? Do you want like a resolution to the Yellow King saga, or do you want some open ends? Do you want possibilities?
I want this to be a real Christmas film
mm-hmm.
set in hell.
Perfect. Okay.
And I think that's hopefully what we're going to get.
Yeah, I hope so.
Feel free to drop us a line. Let us know what you think about the saga of the Yellow King and if you will be watching it with your family this Christmas time. You can drop us a line at Bitter End Pod on Twitter or at Bitter End Pod on Facebook. I am Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny.
End of podcast, says-o me.